This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
This guy just got an award, and the justification is monumental. Chuck Oliver Show on a Wednesday. Hope everybody is having an outstanding existence today, wherever it is you are and wherever it is you're listening. I appreciate you coming here for a little college football conversation. It's what we do for you. We have draft talk coming up a little later in this hour. Mike Tellier is going to come on from WWL Heritage Station down in New Orleans. And we're going to talk draft a little bit. And it's not just LSU, certainly SEC, et cetera. Mike's just a guru when it comes to the NFL draft, so we'll bounce around everywhere. Hour two, Brendan Sinone, our good friend from Knowles 247. Their spring's over, and we're going to talk DJU and some other aspects of the Seminoles program. Then we got some Georgia Bulldogs, talk of Graham Coffey. Fantastic guest, senior editor. TPL Georgia. So we will be talking dogs with Graham in hour two, and he's always a great guest. So that's what's ahead. But when I tell you that a wealthy, famous guy just got an award, that would be Reggie Bush. Is he wealthy? Yeah, for all of us, he's wealthy. He's not wealthy for probably like Barry Sanders or Emmitt Smith because he didn't have their career. But he did have a Heisman Trophy at one point, and way, way, way back in the day, 2010, the Heisman Trust announced that the 2005 Heisman will simply be listed as vacated. So when I say a wealthy, famous guy got an award, I want to correct myself and say an award got returned, but that's not really it. It got reinstated. Returned? I'm not even kidding, folks. Like OJ and that stuff in the Las Vegas hotel room? He was trying to return. Like, it was literally this physical possession, this tangible concrete item was gone. My 1973 Buffalo Bills helmet, like, that was a thing that was taken. That's not really what this is about. When something gets reinstated, that means at some point, the folks who gave it to you looked at you and went, yeah, you're actually not what we thought. Reinstated means it got yanked away. Reinstated means you did something from color outside the lines to murder two people in Brentwood. So in the case of Reggie Bush, he didn't really even do anything. Reggie Bush wins the Heisman after an unbelievable career at USC. And I'm telling you, one of the most people, I'm not old enough. Have y'all ever heard people talk about Johnny R. Superstar? Johnny Rogers from Nebraska? He's just too, it was 71, 72 was his time. Too early for me. Reggie Bush, that ain't too early. Reggie Bush is about as great a three-way player. He played defense? No. I mean running the ball, catching the ball, and playing on special teams. He's about as great a three-way player as I can remember seeing in college football. There was a guy named Rocket Ishmael who was a wide receiver, but that he really just because you got to give a position to a guy, and he did play some receiver, but he really was a kick returner. As far as doing all of that, I mean, Reggie Bush, folks, go back and, like, Google your computer. and find either highlights or the game broadcast. There was a late night thing they did one Saturday against Fresno State. Son, it might have been the game of the season in 04. I think that was the 04 season. And just an unbelievable career. And then he gets a Heisman, which he should have. He earned it. And he wasn't a quarterback, which it had basically become, let's give it to quarterbacks on the best team. And when Reggie Bush won the Heisman, I remember thinking that's a little bit of a redemption for them. Good for them. Because it had started going to some quarterbacks who probably didn't need to be winning the Heisman around that time. Am I remembering correctly? Eric Crouch, Heisman winner, Heisman finalist. What did he do, Heath? Heisman finalist?
Heisman winner. And when you talk about guys
winning, that's got to be made up.
Yeah. Well, my favorite thing about that, and this I swear to you is true, Chuck, if you can find it in the archives, Dennis Dodd, national columnist for CBS, wrote that he voted for him, and I am not kidding, because he came to Media Day every week. That showed leadership. I am not kidding about that.
So go look at Eric Crouch's numbers. And I was thinking, like, if there's this big, giant, you know, sore thumb that sticks out above all the others, it was Crouch. And it seems made up when you look at that. But he was the quarterback on maybe the best team. And so, well, he gets it. Then Reggie Bush happened. And I was like, that's a little bit of a redemption here. Yay, Heisman Trust. And then about 5 years later, when remember, Reggie Bush never took anything to go to USC. About 5 years later, the Heisman Trust yanked the trophy because the details came out that Reggie Bush's parents took something so he would leave USC. That's the weirdest thing ever. And then USC got hammered. Pete Carroll's like, here comes the law. I'm out of town. Lane shows up, 30 scholarships in 3 years. Okay, have fun with that. And that's, by the way, that's when everybody looked at the NCAA and said, thank you, sir. Can I have another? So they stripped the Heisman. And the BCS says, yeah, we didn't have a national champion that year either, because you used an ineligible player. And if you look at the ballot, it says the most outstanding eligible player in college football, 1, 2, and 3, and you write in your votes. And so got to be eligible. At its core, a wealthy, famous guy. I mean, he's on the Wendy's commercial. You don't get on the Wendy's commercial if you're not famous. A wealthy, famous guy getting an award, that's not a big deal. It really isn't. The justification is. Because while they still don't have the national championship at USC for that year, the Heisman Trust says it is returning the Heisman Trophy to Bush. Gave back. He never went sideways about this, and middle finger and F this and I'll do this to your what's it. And no, he never did any of that. He wasn't happy about it. And as I recall, maybe his mom or daddy spoke out. I don't remember that. Reggie, for the most part, was like, yeah, it stinks. So he gets his Heisman back now. BCS has not given them the national championship. But the Heisman Trust, their decision, he forfeited. He was like, all right, I get it. The decision of the Heisman Trust, according to them, quote, was a deliberative process after we have monitored fundamental changes in college athletics, and now student athlete compensation is allowed and an accepted practice and appears here to stay. Does USC go back and get the national championship that year? Because they probably should if the justification holds. Now, justification for a trophy, honestly, you can give a trophy for whatever reason you want. Academy Award, Heisman, I don't know, Player of the Week in the Greater Lawrenceville Athletic Association. It's a trophy. It's a plaque. I don't know. You get free car wash for a month, whatever it is. But that's not the same as the official record all time, and here's our champion of the entire sport. That's why I say if the justification holds. And I'm going to tell you, I'm happy for Reggie Bush because, I may be forgetting something, but I really don't recall him getting publicly profane and untoward against the Heisman Trust. I don't remember the Downtown Athletic Club. I don't remember any of that. So I'm happy he gets this back. The justification is slippery. Because at this point, if it's the rules have changed, so we're going to go back and reinstate what was against the rules, which was, quote, illegal in the realm of sports at the time. We're going to go back now that the rules have changed. We're going to go back. Because if that's what we're doing, can my team have the 1993 national championship? We'd love it. Well, you used ineligible players. Not by today's standards. If you want to go back, I think what eventually led to Auburn going undefeated in 1993 and not being national champs, I believe what it was, on some level, was frozen steaks in a freezer. Like, that was kind of at the root of it. Bama was going through their own thing at that same time with Gene Jelks and all that. And that was like a couple of car payments, I think. So if we're going to go back and use the justification, I say it's slippery because at that point, well, that's just a trophy. What about some official stuff as well? And then we start changing the record books and the records, and what we put on the side of the stadium actually begins to not just be things we claim and decide. It actually is backed up by, no, the BCS went back and gave us 2004, as a matter of fact. So it's a great story. If you can drop Reggie and his trophy and that season into a fishbowl, it is a great story. If the justification holds beyond things like trophies and awards, it does get slippery, and I mean immediately. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, jump into it next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Wednesday on Chuck Oliver's Show, we're talking college football, and that certainly includes a little draft conversation. I told you Mike Tellier from WWL, he knows what it's about, up and down the draft. Just a legit expert about the function every single April, and we love having him on, so he'll be on in about 15 minutes. I have attended a draft in person, Vegas, 2 years ago. We were broadcasting actually at Paris, right there on the Strip, and when I was off the air, I'm not fooling folks, I could step out of Paris. There's a little cafe down there, and you step out onto the Strip. If I looked to my right and took like 25 steps, I would walk into the NFL draft. I walked to my left. I looked over there. There's like 250,000 people. I don't know, 300,000? Whatever. I was like, I'm going that way. So it's fun, and it's a big, big, big deal. It's in Detroit. Isn't it Detroit tonight or tomorrow, Heath?
It is.
Yeah, which we talked about that. I think it's the bone throw, maybe. Maybe it's a bone throw for a city who's not going to get a Super Bowl or they're not going to get in the rotation. And they can use the event for whatever they want, and it's going to get big ratings. Nashville did it great. Vegas did it great. I'm sure Detroit will be fine. But whether in Detroit in person tomorrow night or Salvatore's in Newark, there's one group who really should hush up during the draft, and it's New York Jets fans. In 2008, the radio station I worked for was the flagship for an NHL team. In that year's draft, the team selected Zach Redmond. He was a defenseman from Ferris State. I didn't boo the pick because I know almost nothing about college hockey. Or juniors or the Swedish training league before you turn 18 and then you go to the Army for 2 years. Or college hockey in the United States. So I didn't boo the pick. I promise you, tomorrow night, Jets fans are going to boo their team's pick. They have become famous among all other fan bases in the NFL. If you ask, hey, what do you think about Jets fans? Oh, they booed the pick. Or, which NFL team boos the pick? Oh, that's the Jets, isn't it? Like, we know Eagles fans, they booed Santa Claus. Like, everybody, there's an avenue, there's a lane, and for Jets fans, their lane, they're miserable at the draft. They're going to boo the pick no matter what it is. And I know that because it's happened my entire life, at least since I recall the draft being televised. It was originally in New York, and I mean for a few decades. So Jets and Giants fans dominated the attendance once they started letting fans in. And at first, they were going to great lengths to out-miserable one another to get the belt for loudest, most disgruntled NFL fans. For some reason, you wanted that one. They did. They insisted, no, I want this belt. I want everybody to know that we're angrier and more miserable. First time I saw this happen, go to YouTube, folks. It's all over. You can find it easy. First time I saw this happen, I think I was a seventh grader. 1981. Team selected UCLA running back Freeman McNeil with the 3rd overall pick. Again, I was a seventh grader, and I was like, McNeil's a horse. That guy is a monster. Now, I didn't really understand everything even close, like a teacup versus like a number 10 washtub of what was really important about football. I had watched UCLA and Freeman McNeil enough to know as a seventh grader, I was like, that guy is a monster. He's going to be really good in the NFL because he's what the NFL is about. And that is, give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball. I might get to the edge, but if I don't, it's not a big deal. I have shoulder pads. 3rd overall pick, Freeman McNeil, 7th grade me's going, kind of like it. Didn't even get the thought bubble completed. And Jets fans, boo, he sucks. And I was like, really? Freeman McNeil sucks? I missed that game. Well, Freeman McNeil, 3rd overall pick, booed by Jets fans. And I mean, it wouldn't end. He started for a decade. Retired as the team's all-time leading rusher, and when the franchise established its ring of honor, Freeman's in. Like, out of the gate, Freeman's up. And he was booed. Truth is, Jets fans, they didn't know any more about him than I did about Zach Redmond. Jets fans now, this is the truth. Jets fans shouldn't boo the college player who was selected because Jets fans don't know about college football. They don't. They think they do. They don't. If you ask me about college hockey, honestly, hey, Chuck, what do you think about the Frozen Four? I would fake my way through. I would ask you a question about either Boston University or Denver or, I don't know, one of the Dakotas goes. And maybe I would, like, that's as surface level and arm's length as you can get. New York Jets fans, they don't know anything about college football. They think they do. They don't. Patriots fans, you don't either. Giants fans, you don't either. Steelers, Eagles fans, you don't either. Bengals fans, okay, you do. Lions fans, I'll give y'all credit. Y'all recognized a hard product and y'all stayed away for decades. Now you're back. But I'm telling you, you get into the Northeast, they don't know anything about college football and they boo the college player who just got picked. So, hush up, Jets fans, and anybody else in that region who boos a draft pick, because you don't know college football. You really don't. Hey, how's your Wednesday?
Well, the key to that, too, though, Chuck, is because they don't, then they know what they've been told by the mock drafts to expect. So if the mock drafts are correct, then they'll cheer, because that's what was supposed to happen. If they don't get the name that they're supposed to, then they'll boo, even though they have no idea, like you say, a lot of them, what exactly it is they're doing.
Zero.
Important story yesterday out of Texas A&M. And look, people got to take this different ways. I think it's a look into the future of college sports as a whole. Maybe some people will not see it this way. Yesterday, Texas A&M laid off more than a dozen staffers. And we're not just talking like security guards or something. We're talking about people with titles like executive deputy athletic director and chief operating officer, deputy athletic director for external relations and business development, associate athletic director for branding, creative, and communications, the director of football technology, people who, it's safe to say, were making pretty good coin and who had jobs that were considered to be important. Now, the obvious connection to draw here, Chuck, would be, well, they had to give Jimbo basically a gigantic sum of money, so these folks are paying for it. Trev Alberts, in a statement, said, no, you know, that's not it. Basically, what he's saying is, we've got to position ourselves for the future. And who knows, maybe if Trev Alberts hadn't come in from the outside and had relationships with these people, maybe there's a chance that he would have tried to hold on to some, but because he doesn't, he can be more swing the axe. But, Chuck, over these last couple of decades, as the money went up and up and up, you know what's happened. They've added more and more positions, more and more everything, because they weren't paying the kids. And now, whenever it happens, however it happens, whether it be settling the lawsuit, losing the lawsuit with the house case, they're going to be paying a lot of back money to kids. They're also going to be having to figure out how to pay the kids in the future. Again, it's coming. Whether you like it or not, it's coming. And we don't know exactly when, but it's sooner rather than later. Chuck, I don't feel good for any of these people. I hated it happened for them. I think we're going to see a repeat of this scene in a whole bunch of places, even the places like the SEC that have more money than anybody else. These positions existed because they had the money to fill them, and they're about to not have them. And what do you know? It's going to turn out like a lot of us have believed the whole time. These athletic departments were bloated with a lot of positions that, hey, it's fine to have, but there's a difference between have and have to have. And so there's going to be some good people who work in college athletics are going to find themselves needing to get out and into another career, because I think this is going to play out over and over, and it's a shame.
There is something about loyalty and expertise and experience and everything else. I was thinking off the top of my head, I can name three ACC schools right now who I knew personally firsthand someone who was in basically a retirement position, but they were only 59. And so it was a position that was inflated, didn't need, blah, blah, blah. But they've been with the program for 30 years, and oh, well, she runs the place. I need three of those right now. When you've got the money and you're nonprofit, that means if you've got the money, you have to spend the money. Now they're being told, yeah, guess what's on the horizon? We're going to tell you where you're going to be spending a large amount of that money.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a Mad Men's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football and Chuck Oliver Show. 9 states and 60 sticks. I appreciate the blessing, folks. Been doing it for about a decade, and the horizon is there as well. Draft is tomorrow night, and when you talk about NFL draft gurus, guys who know what it's about, man, you don't get too far down the list, you're going to run into the name Mike Dettelier, WWL, there in New Orleans. Michael, welcome back to the program, friend. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks so much for having me on.
Am I correct? The draft begins at 2. Can we just skip right past the Bears, and then they're drafting Caleb, and we can go to the second pick?
We were talking about this on Sports Talk yesterday. I think the draft starts at 4, but I get at 2. I still think the Commanders are going to pick Jaden Daniels. It makes all the sense in the world for them to do so. You know, whatever little tip, his agent had, get over it. Come on. They got much bigger fish to fry in this world than to worry about what he's worried about. But, I've got to seek Jaden for a long time here at LSU over the 2 years he was here and around him. Chuck, he's the most humble star I've ever been around in 40 years doing this. I mean, you would never know. Joe Burrow, you knew. And he sort of exuded that he's a star. He didn't have to tell you, but you knew it. Mm-hmm. With Jaden, he's the most humble star I've ever been around for a Heisman Trophy winner. And he's a big play athlete. He's gotten so much better throwing the deep ball. It's the one big knock I have on Caleb Williams. I think sometimes instead of taking that, you know, the little 5 foot jump shot or the, you know, hitting the layup, he wants to hit the big play every time. With Jaden, he was just the opposite. He would want to throw the short stuff, and then he got so much better in the offseason last year with the deeper pass, just kind of hanging it out there and letting Malik and Brian Thomas and Hilton and Lacy get under it. But his improvisational skills in the pocket are unique. And the one thing that drives me nuts is quarterbacks are going to get sacked. That's just the world. But the unnecessary ones, you think about Jaden, he rarely takes an unnecessary sack. That's the one knock I have on Drake May. He'll sit in that pocket. Now, he's streaky as a passer, but he'll sit in that pocket and wait and wait and wait, and then he gets sacked. So instead of 2nd and 6, now you 3rd and 18.
Is it a real draft?
That would drive me nuts.
Is it a real draft possibility that Marvin Harrison is the second wide receiver behind Malik?
No, I think Marvin goes first. I really do. And I've seen Malik from his high school days on. And, man, just crazy that he ended up at LSU. He was not on the A-list. He was headed to Mississippi State. In the final moments, Coach O and the staff got him to commit to LSU. And he's a big-time star. I'm not a great on comps, but he reminds me so much of Ja'Marr Chase. They built alike. The speed's the same. What they can do, man, he's a big play athlete, and he's supremely confident. Jaden tells me a story. We're in the huddle, and he said, I look downfield, and he's double covered, and they got a safety rolling his way, and he was like, you should have thrown it to me. I was open. He was like, open? You had 3 guys around you. I threw it to Thomas. He scored the touchdown. But if you know Malik, that's the way he is, and Ja'Marr was the exact same way. Just throw it to me. I got it.
So if Marvin is the first receiver, if that's Arizona at 4, is J.J. McCarthy to someone at 5?
Yeah, I really believe that. I think the draft starts at 4. And if the Cardinals, and I give Monty Ossenford a lot of credit, man, I think he's maneuvered this draft thing really well. If he finds a partner, you could see 1, 2, 3, 4 go quarterbacks. If not, then they go Harrison, and then the Vikings trade up to get J.J. McCarthy. And it would drop Malik to the Giants to that spot. And, man, the Giants need as much firepower as they can get. So
yeah, and you know what it is? The league has become a league of, if we have a first-round quarterback, or even with Jalen in the 2nd round, if we have our franchise, what we think is a franchise guy in his rookie deal, let's give him stuff. If it was Tua, let's give him stuff. Jaden, give him stuff. I agree with you. I think Daniel Jones are like, all right, we're married now. Let's give him stuff. So you're telling me that I live in a world where the first left tackle and the first edge rusher are still on the board at 6 or 7?
That's the world we live in. I hate to break it to you, but it is true.
My goodness.
Yeah, and it is one of the best offensive tackle classes I've done in my 40 years doing this. And Joe's unusual because for a 6'7.5", 315-pound guy, you think he's a power player, and he's not. He's more of an angle leverage type blocker, a really good athlete, but he's not a power guy at the point of attack. And then I guess it's everybody's different opinion. I think Dallas Turner is the best defensive player in this draft class. He gives you that pass rush, that ability to set the edge. He's dropped back in coverage at time, but man, you can just see his speed and his ability to run the field. And he's got some potential for upside as a pass rusher. But it was close with me with Dallas, Quinyon Mitchell, the cornerback from Toledo, and Byron Murphy, the second from Texas. It was an undersized defensive tackle. And everybody wants to talk about Sweat because he's 370 pounds. But the reason why is everybody's double-teaming Byron Murphy. Okay, he's one-on-one. He should win those battles.
Continuing, Mike Dettillier, WWL, talking NFL draft. All right, there are different sort of cornerbacks in the league. There is like an A.J. Terrell that wants to fight you and, you know, beat you up at the line. And then there's a guy like Derek Stingley that's like, where's the football? I want to pick that off, take it the other way. Quickly, give me an example of each of those two types of corner. The physical guy who wants to, you know, hand fight and knock you off your route, and the guy who almost wants to bait the QB and to get the ball in the air so he can pick it. Give me an example of a cornerback in each of those categories.
Okay, Mitchell is much closer to Stingley in that he wants to bait you to throw the ball in his area. And with his speed, he thinks, you know, he can outrun, and he's got unbelievable recovery speed, similar to Stingley. So that would be the comp. Terrion Arnold is the guy that's physical with you. He loves the press coverage part of the game. He can also play in the off coverage. Really smart, good technician. And so that would be the comp for Terrion Arnold that doesn't have the foot speed that you see in Mitchell. But man, he's a technical guy and really physical with receivers to reroute them and to take away that short pass. So, okay, if you limited and you don't have a lot of time to throw it, you know, Kerryon sort of steals that away from you.
All right. Michael Penix, smart, leader, old, bombs away is the mentality. And I'm like, if I'm an NFL team, I think I like all that. I don't like the injury history, and it's one on each knee. Is that literally each franchise, the risk management, the risk adverse attitude in the front office, is that literally by franchise how much of a taste they have for that sort of risk?
Yeah, I think that is a call to medically on how you feel about it. You know what you just described? What does it remind you of? He's a Raiders type player, isn't he?
Yep.
Isn't that what they want to do? They
Al Davis always wanted that.
Downfield.
Yep.
And so that's exactly the type of quarterback that the Raiders would look for. The other team, it would be sneaky with them, would be Seattle. Because of the fact, man, look at the receiving core, the tight end you have. You got a good running game already. And now you got a guy that can really heave the deep throw. And he's tough as could be. And he's a tough dude. He takes some shots of Michael Penix Jr. But is there concern with the knee? Yeah, there's no question because he's had it on both. But a tough guy that's been through adversity. And you know what? A lot of guys have never had it, Chuck. Never been in that spot. He's had it and overcome it. To me, that's a plus. Because a lot of these young guys, Ed Reed told me this years ago, he was like, man, they want to break you down mentally. And then you make physical mistakes. He said, that's the biggest thing I see with these guys today. They mentally have never been in a tough spot. You look at Penix. He's been in difficult spots, and yet he's come out of that.
Wrapping up, Mike Dettillier, WWL in New Orleans. Again, just a draft expert. Always appreciate his time ahead of every draft. J.C. Latham. Give me your download on him because I see an Alabama left tackle and I'm like, well, I know how that looks in the NFL. But there's also some talk like they never got there here with Andre Smith or Cyrus or whatever. But like there's conversation. He may actually be a guard. What is your download of J.C. Latham?
My thing is he's going to play right tackle for me until he can prove that he can't. I mean, he's a 1350 cab ride to get around. He is a wide load. Now, you take a look at him and say, there's no way he's 350 pounds, but he gets on that scale. He's all of it. He's lengthy. He's gotten better as a pass blocker. I always thought he was a really good run blocker. And so he's a strong side guy. He'll play on the right side. And I think if you have an experienced offensive line coach with the technical part of the game. The one thing he does, I see as a negative, he overextends, and that's when he gets beat. And a lot of that has to do when a player gives him a hard inside move, not so much off the edge, a hard inside move, and he sort of overextends, and then he loses his balance and control. But you look at this draft class, you know, once you get past Alt, and they all jumble together from Fashanu, Fuagu from Oregon State, JC, Fontana. If he were 6'5", we wouldn't even be having this conversation. But they all sort of all lump together, and I think that you will see teams trying to trade up in the teens to get a specific offensive tackle because there's a little drop-off after that, and it becomes the all-potential guys. And somebody like Amarius Mims, who's played 8 games.
Yep.
But yet, physically, he has the tools – some of these guys would love to have. And also Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma. He's only started 14 games in college. He was an H-back, you know, at TCU, an H-back. And then so you have a little bit of growth here with both of these players with not a lot of experience, but you can bank it. From 18 to 24, those two guys are coming off the board. And how you feel about Graham Barton? Will he play tackle? Will he play center? Will he play guard?
Yeah.
And 3-year starter at left tackle, never played center before as an 18-year-old freshman. It was, hey, kid, get in there and take over. Our top two guys are knocked out because of injury. He went in there and did a super job. How many guys can do that?
Last thing I want to ask you is, in your opinion, give me a guy who you think most – teams look around and it may be 35, 40, 45 in that range. Give me a guy that you think most folks look at as probably a second rounder that if you're sitting at 30, 31, 32, you trade to that pick maybe so you can get him as a first round pick with the fifth year. Is there a guy that you think is worth trading into the end of the first round to say, yeah, he's going to actually develop. He's going to be worth getting that fifth year. Well, you know what? That is the ultimate tease. It really is. We lost him. Mike Dettelier from WWL. Folks, I said, when you're talking about draft experts, you heard it right there. Didn't prep him for any of that stuff. Had it top of his mind, and I always appreciate his time. Again, WWL in there in New Orleans, just a fantastic station as well. So I appreciate Mike coming on. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Come back, and we'll get you Michael's answer as well. Come back and wrap up Hour 1 next.
To Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Wednesday on the Chuck Oliver Show, and there is one ACC athletic department being transparently crass, driven only by finances. And your AD should be taking notes. We heard this yesterday. Heath brought it up. If you weren't aware, the Clemson spring tour that the coaches would go on every May and into June, the Clemson spring tour had been renamed forever and ever, amen, for the past decade plus. It had been the Prowl and Growl. And it had been run by both Clemson Athletics and IPTE. And if you don't know what IPTE is, IPTE, I pay 10 a year. It was the booster club that Clemson, they were ahead of the game, man, back in the late 30s, I think it was, early 40s at some point. I pay 10 a year. You give $10, you're in the booster club. I don't know that $10 really gets you a whole lot with Clemson Athletics right now, but IPTE has survived, and it's almost 100 years old, and it's a wildly successful fundraising arm. But with Clemson Athletics, like the university part of it, and then IPTE, the fundraising part of it, the Growl and Prowl Tour happened for the past, like I said, decade plus. And it was their version. Ole Miss has theirs, and Auburn has theirs, and Florida State has its. And yeah, so everybody does it. Does anyone really like it? Some of the coaches, that's where they're most comfortable. But for most of them, it's just kind of what they have to do. Well, Clemson let everybody know that's all changing now. That Ipte is in charge of the Clemson Roadshow. It is no longer the Prowl and Growl. It is the Roadshow. And there is a dollar attached to it. In fact, there is so much of a dollar attached to these events now that there is no time at all for a media session, which I've gone to a lot of these, and you just put the mic there, and it's a way to actually get a nice sound bite in April or May or June when there may not be a whole lot going on. And so it was always, and it was never deep probing stuff. Dabo, have you solved cold fusion? Like, that wasn't really where we took the questions. And Tennessee, the Big Orange Tour, I think, whatever it was. It was always really good stuff in April and May and June. And it turned everybody listening knows exactly what these meetings are. Clemson's is different now. Ipte took control. And last night, for instance, was the second stop on the tour. They were in Charlotte last night. They'll be in Myrtle Beach coming up, Charleston, and then Columbia on May 22nd. And Clemson is now dealing out their coaches and athletic directors, among others, as name, image, likeness bait, basically. This is not about big, giant, huge rooms where everybody's kind of welcome. And then if you have money, you can pay a little extra and you can get some more access. But we want big, giant gatherings of people who all believe the same wonderful things about our program. And that was whether it was LSU, Texas Tech, or anybody else. Clemson had theirs. Now it's different. They are now doing it in much smaller rooms. Maximum, I've seen folks, I've spoken at these with almost like 2,000 people at them in Atlanta. Big giant rooms with huge crowds coming off a national championship. I don't know. It happens. So, Ipte, we're going to have no more than 300 in a room. And we're probably going to charge a little more money, and we're going to have a lot more on-site vendors, and all of them are going to be attached to money as well. And we're going to be so busy raising money that we don't have time to talk to the media at all. Now, that's their choice. And I promise you, when I say your AD should be taking notes of this transparently crass and driven by finances approach, in 2021, this is the first year out of the global pandemic where, you know, breathing air could kill you. Ipte, the athletic fundraising arm, they set a new record in 2021. They raised $76 million that year. This past year, set a new record, $135 million. So given the loot that Ipte brings in, they really do not care what any of us think about how they're running their event in Myrtle Beach next month. And if you think Clemson is behind a financial eight ball because it gets a third of the media money Mississippi State gets or Vanderbilt gets, Wake Forest total donations for athletics last year was about $30 million. So Wake, Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, yeah, you're still $60 million behind programs from the SEC. An additional $100 million behind programs in your own conference. So Clemson, they really are not concerned by Chuck's criticism about how crass they are and only about the Benjamins. Heath, what's going on?
Well, we heard back from Mike Dettelier, and Edrin Cooper is his answer. The off-ball linebacker from A&M.
Fantastic.
Says, magnet to the football, drops back very well in coverage. So if he could trade in for a guy maybe at the back part of the first round, that would be the name that sprung to mind for him. He also had something to say about his cell company, but we won't share that on the air. But he's not a fan. Also, NCAA, this is something that I thought was interesting, Chuck. They put those reforms in about whether or not you can transfer, and they also put in about that the staff can give coaching instruction in practices and games. We're not going to have any more of the, you're supposed to be an analyst. You're not allowed to tell the DB what he does with his feet. You're an analyst. You're not allowed to on-field coach. That's all gone. What I also thought, though, was if you look at the language they put out, they tried to preemptively basically stop the next, like, nine plans that they know somebody's going to do to try and abuse this. And I'm quoting here. The proposal does not permit an institution to hire outside consultants to coach student athletes, does not permit an institution to set up satellite recruiting offices, and does not permit institutions to hire staff members whose sole responsibility is to recruit off campus. Like, they're already waiting for somebody to basically say, we're going to set up the College Station satellite office in Atlanta and have quote unquote coaches who live in Atlanta and never set foot in College Station and do nothing but recruit full time. They're already ready for somebody to try that and are specifically saying, even as they approve these changes, you can't do this. Don't ask. No way. No how. We won't let you do this, because that's where everybody is no matter how far you can go, somebody wants to push it a little farther.
I think Jim Harbaugh, just for fun, even though he's in the NFL and has a lot to do, I think Jim Harbaugh, just for fun, is going to come up with like 5 or 10 ways to get around this and email it to all his buddies who are still head coaches.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation, like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right. You can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly, because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today. AccentRoofingService.com.